So they have been to you and made their offer. What fools you are to trust the... I have not said we trust. If Logno back there, nod of head indicating the aide in the room, heard you talking to me this way, you would be dead in less time than I take to warn you of it. I am fortunate there are only the two of us. Don't count on that to carry you much farther. Odraid glanced over her shoulder at the building. Alterations in guild design were visible. A long facade of windows, much exotic wood and jeweled stones. Wealth. She was dealing with wealth in an extreme it would be hard for some to imagine. Nothing Dama wanted, nothing that could be provided by the society subservient to her would be denied. Nothing except freedom to go back into the scattering. How firmly did Dama cling to the fantasy that her exile might end? And what was the force that had driven such power back to the old empire? Why here? Odraid dared not ask. We will continue this in my quarters, Dama said. Into the Spider Queen's lair at last. Dama's quarters were a bit of a puzzle. Richly carpeted floors. She kicked off sandals and went barefoot on entering. Odraid followed this lead. Look at the calloused flesh along the outsides of her feet. Dangerous weapons kept well conditioned. Not the soft floor, but the room itself puzzled Odraid. One small window looking over the carefully manicured botanical garden. No hangings or pictures on the walls. No decorations. An air vent grill drew shadowy stripes above the door they had entered. One other door on the right. Another air vent. Two soft gray couches. Two small side tables in glistening black. Another larger table in tones of gold with a green shimmer above it to indicate a control field. Odraid identified the fine rectangular outline of a projector inset into the golden table. Ah, this is her workroom. Are we here to work? A refined concentration about this place. Care had been taken to eliminate distractions. What distractions would Dama accept? Where are the decorated rooms? She has to live in particular ways with her surroundings. You cannot always be forming mental barriers to reject things around you that sit disagreeably in your psyche. If you want real comfort, your home cannot be set up in a way that attacks you, especially no attacks on the unconscious side. She is aware of unconscious vulnerabilities. This one is truly dangerous, but she has the power to say yes. It was an ancient Bene Gesserit insight. You looked for the ones who could say yes. Never bother with underlings who can only say no. You sought the one who can make an agreement, sign a contract, pay off on a promise. Spider Queen did not often say yes, but she had that power and knew it. I should have realized when she took me aside. She sent me the first signal when she permitted me to call her Dama. Have I been too precipitate, setting up Teg's attack in a way I cannot stop? Too late for second thoughts. I knew it when I unleashed him. But what other forces may we attract? Odraid had Dama's dominance pattern registered. Words and gestures were likely to make Spider Queen recoil, crouching back to intense awareness of her own heartbeats. The drama must go forward. Dama was doing something with her hands in the green field atop the golden table. She concentrated on it, ignoring Odraid in a way that was both insult and compliment. You will not interfere, witch, because that is not in your best interest, and you know it. Besides, you are not important enough to distract me. Dama appeared agitated. Has the attack on Gamu been successful? Are refugees beginning to arrive? an orange glare focused on Odrade. Your pilot has just destroyed himself and your ship rather than submit to our inspection. What did you bring? Ourselves. There is a signal coming from you, telling my companions whether I am alive or dead. You already knew that. Some of our ancestors burned their ships before an attack. No retreat possible. Odrade spoke with exquisite care, tone and timing adjusted to Dama's responses. If I am successful, you will provide my transport. My pilot was a cyborg, and Cher could not protect him from your probes. His orders were to kill himself rather than fall into your hands, providing us with coordinates to your planet. The orange subsided from Dama's eyes, but she still was disturbed. I did not think your people obeyed you to that extent. How do you hold them without sexual bonding, witch? Is the answer not obvious? We have secret powers. Careful now, Odrade cautioned herself. A methodical approach, alert for new demands. Let her think we choose one method of response and stick to it. How much does she know about us? She does not know that even Mother Superior may be only a morsel of bait, a lure to gain vital information. Does that make us superior? If so, can superior training surmount superior speed and numbers? Odrade had no answer. Dama seated herself behind the golden table, leaving Odrade standing. There was a nesting sense about the movement. She did not leave this place often. This was the true center of her web. All things she thought she needed were here. She had brought Odrade to this room because it was an inconvenience to be elsewhere. She was uncomfortable in other settings, perhaps even felt threatened. Dama did not court danger. She had done so once, but that was long ago, shut off behind her somewhere. Now she wanted only to sit here in a safe and well-organized cocoon where she could manipulate others. Odrade found these observations a welcome affirmation of Bene Gesserit deductions. The Sisterhood knew how to exploit this leverage. Have you nothing more to say? Dama asked. Stall for time. Odrade ventured a question. I am extremely curious why you agreed to this meeting. Why are you curious? It seems so out of character for you. We determine what is in character for us. Quite testy there. But what is it about us interests you? You think we find you interesting? Perhaps you even find us remarkable, because that is certainly how we look at you. A pleased expression made its fleeting appearance on Dama's face. I knew you would be fascinated by us. The exotic interests the exotic, Odrade said. This brought a knowing smile to Dama's lips, the smile of someone whose pet has been clever. She stood and went to the one window. Summoning Odrade to her side, Dama gestured to a stand of trees beyond the first flowering bushes and spoke in that soft accent so difficult to follow. Something ticked off an inner alarm. Odrade fell into simulflow, seeking the source. Something in the room, or in Spider Queen. There was a lack of spontaneity about the setting, matched by much that Dama did. So all of this was designed to create an effect, carefully schemed. Is this one really my Spider Queen? Or is there a more powerful one watching us? Odrade explored this thought, sorting swiftly. It was a process that provided more questions than answers, a mental shorthand akin to that of Mentats. Sort for relevance and bring up the latent but orderly backgrounds. Order generally was a product of human activity. Chaos existed as raw material from which to create order. That was the Mentat approach, giving no unalterable truths, but a remarkable lever for decision-making. orderly assemblage of data in a non-discrete system. She arrived at a projective. They revel in chaos, prefer it. Adrenaline addicts. So Dhamma was Dhamma, great honored mater. Forever the patroness, forever the superior. There is no greater one watching us. But Dhamma believes this is bargaining. One would think she had never done it before. Precisely. Dhamma touched an unmarked place below the window, and the wall folded back, revealing that the window was but an artful projection. The way was opened onto a high balcony paved with dark green tiles. It overlooked plantations much different from those in the window projection. Here was chaos preserved, wilderness left to its own devices, and made more remarkable by ordered gardens in the distance. Brambles, fallen trees, thick bushes, and beyond, evenly spaced rows of what appeared to be vegetables with automated harvesters passing back and forth, leaving bare ground behind them. Love of chaos indeed. Spider Queen smiled and led the way onto the balcony. As she emerged, Odraid once more was stopped by what she saw. A decoration on the parapet to her left. A life-size figure shaped from an almost ethereal substance. All feathery planes and curved surfaces. When she squinted at the figure, Odraid saw it was intended to represent a human. Male or female. In some positions male, and in some female. Planes and curves responded to vagrant breezes. Thin, almost invisible wires, looked to be sugar wire, suspended it from a delicately curving tube anchored in a translucent mound. The lower extremities of the figure almost touched the pebbled surface of the supporting base. Odraid stared, captivated. Why does it remind me of Shiana's The Void? When the wind moved it, the whole creation appeared to dance, relapsing sometimes into a graceful walk, then a slow pirouette, and sweeping turns with outstretched leg. It is called Ballet Master, Dhamma said. In some winds, it will kick its feet high. I have seen it running as gracefully as a marathoner. Sometimes it is just ugly little motions, arms jerking as though they held weapons. Beautiful and ugly, it is all the same. I think the artist misnamed it. Being unknown would have been better. Beautiful and ugly, all the same. Being unknown. That was a terrible thing about Shiana's creation. Odraid felt a cold wash of fear. Who was the artist? I've no idea. One of my predecessors took it from a planet we were destroying. Why does it interest you? It's the wild thing no one can govern. But she said, I presume we're both seeking a basis for understanding, trying to find similarities between us. This brought the orange glare. You may try to understand us, but we have no need to understand you. Both of us come from societies of women. It is dangerous to think of us as your offshoots. But Mirbella's evidence says you are, formed in the scattering by fish speakers and reverend mothers in extremis. All ingenuous and fooling nobody, Odraid asks, why is that dangerous? Dhamma's laugh conveyed no amusement, vindictive. Odraid experienced an abrupt new assessment of danger. More than a Bene Gesserit probe and review was demanded here. These women were accustomed to killing when angered, a reflex. Dhamma had said as much when speaking to her aide, and Dhamma had just signaled there were limits to her tolerance. Yet, in her own way, she is trying to bargain. She displays her mechanical marvels, her powers, her wealth. No offer of alliance. Be willing servants, witches, our slaves, and we will forgive much. To to gain the last of the million planets? More than that, certainly. But an interesting number. With a new caution, Odrade reformed her approach. Reverend Mothers too easily fell into an adaptive pattern. I am, of course, quite different from you, but I will unbend for the sake of accord. That would not do with honored maters. They would accept nothing to suggest they were not in absolute control. It was a statement of Dama's superiority over her sisters that she allowed Odrade so much latitude. Once more, Dama spoke in her imperious manner. Odrade listened. How odd that Spider Queen thought one of the most attractive things the Bene Gesserit could provide was immunity from new diseases. Was that the form of attack that drove them here? Her sincerity was naive. None of this tiresome periodic checking to see if you had acquired secret inhabitants in your flesh. Sometimes not so secret. Sometimes disgustingly perilous. But the Bene Gesserit could end all that, and would be suitably rewarded. How pleasant. Still that vindictive tone in every word. Odrade caught herself in this thought. Vindictive? That did not catch the proper flavor. Something carried at a deeper level. Unconsciously jealous of what you lost when you broke away from us? This was another pattern, and it had been stylized. Honored maters fell back on repetitious mannerisms. Mannerisms we abandoned long ago. This was more than refusal to recognize Bene Gesserit origins. This was garbage disposal. Drop your discards wherever they lose your interest. Underlings take out the garbage. She is more concerned with the next thing she wants to consume than she is with fouling her own nest. The honored mater flaw was larger than suspected, much more deadly to themselves and all they control. And they could not face it because to them it was not there. Never existed. Dama remained an untouchable paradox. No question of alliance entered her mind. She would seem to dance up to it, but only to test her enemy. I was right, after all, to unleash Teg. Logno came out of the workroom with a tray, on which stood two spindly glasses almost filled with golden liquid. Dama took one, sniffed it, and sipped with a pleased expression. What is that vicious glitter in Logno's eyes? Try some of this wine, Dama said, gesturing to Odrade. It's from a planet I'm sure you've never heard of, but where we have concentrated the required elements to produce the perfect golden grape for the perfect golden wine. Odrade was caught by this long association of humans with their precious ancient drink, the god Bacchus. Berries fermented on the bush or in tribal containers. It is not poisoned, Dama said as Odrade hesitated. I assure you. We kill where it suits our needs, but we are not crass. We reserve our more blatant deadliness for the masses. I do not mistake you for one of the masses. Dama chuckled at her own witticism. The labored friendliness was almost gross. Odrade took the proffered glass and sipped. It's a thing someone devised to please us, Dama said, her attention fixed on Odrade. The one sip was enough. Odrade's senses detected a foreign substance, and she was several heartbeats identifying its purpose. To nullify the share protecting me from their probes. She adjusted her metabolism to render the substance harmless, then announced what she had done. Dama glared at Logno. So that is why none of these things work with the witches. And you never suspected? The rage was an almost physical force directed at the hapless aide. It is one of the immune systems with which we combat disease, Odrade said. Dama hurled her glass to the tiles. She was some time regaining composure. Logno retreated slowly, holding the tray almost as a shield. So Dama did more than sneak into power. Her sisters consider her deadly, and so must I consider her. Someone will pay for this wasted effort, Dama said. Her smile was not pleasant. Someone. Someone made the wine. Someone made the dancing figure. Someone will pay. The identity was never important, only the pleasure or the need for retribution, subservience. Do not interrupt my thoughts, Dama said. She went to the parapet and gazed at her being unknown, obviously recomposing her bargaining stance. Odre turned her attention to Logno. What was that continued watchfulness, rapt attention fixed on Dama? No longer simple fear. Logno suddenly appeared supremely dangerous. Poison. Odrade knew it as certainly as though the aide had shouted the word. I am not Logno's target. Not yet. She has taken this opportunity to make her bid for power. There was no need to look at Dama. The moment of Spider Queen's death was visible on Logno's face. Turning, Odrade confirmed it. Dama lay in a heap under being unknown. You will call me Great Honored Mater, Logno said. And you will learn to thank me for it. She, pointing at the red heap in the balcony corner, intended to betray you and exterminate your people. I have other plans. I am not one to destroy a useful weapon at the moment of our greatest need. Battle. There's always a desire for breathing space motivating it somewhere. The Bashar Teg. Mirbella watched the struggle for junction with a detachment that did not reflect her feelings. She stood with a coterie of proctors in her no-ship's command center, attention fixed on relay projections from groundside comis. There were battles all around junction, bursts of light on dark side, gray eruptions on dayside. A major engagement directed by Teg centered on the Citadel, a giant mound of guild design with a new tower near its rim. Although Odrade's vital signs transmissions had stopped abruptly, her early reports confirmed that Great Honored Mater was in there. The need to observe from a distance helped Mirbella's sense of detachment, but she felt the excitement. Interesting times. This ship contained precious cargo. The millions from Lampadas were being shared and prepared for scattering in a suite ordinarily reserved for Mother Superior. The wild sister with her cargo of memory dominated their priorities here. Golden egg for sure. Mirbella thought of the lives being risked in that suite, preparing for the worst. No lack of volunteers and the threat in the junction conflict minimized need for spice poison to ignite sharings, reducing danger. Anyone on this ship could sense all or nothing in Odrade's gamble. Imminent threat of death was recognized. Sharing necessary. Transformation of a reverend mother into sets of memories passed around at perilous cost among the sisters no longer carried a mysterious aura for her. But Mirbella still was awed by the responsibility. The courage of Rebecca and Lucilla demanded admiration. Millions of memory lives, all concentrated in what the sisterhood called extremis progressiva. 2 by 2, then 4 by 4, and 16 by 16, until each held all of them, and any survivor could preserve the precious accumulation. What they were doing in Mother Superior's suite had some of that flavor. The concept no longer terrified Mirbella, but it was not yet ordinary. Odrade's words comforted. Once you have fully accommodated to the bundles of other memory, all else falls into a perspective that is utterly familiar, as though you had known it always. Mirbella recognized that Teg was prepared to die in defense of this multiple awareness that was the sisterhood of the Bene Gesserit. Can I do less? Teg, no longer completely an enigma, remained an object of respect. Odraid within amplified this with reminders of his exploits. Then, I wonder how I'm doing down there. Ask. Comm Command said, no word. Botter transmissions may have been blocked by energy shielding. They knew who really asked the question. It was on their faces. She has Odraid. Mirbella again focused on the battle at the Citadel. Her own reaction surprised Mirbella. Everything colored by historical disgust at repetition of war's nonsense. But still, this exuberant spirit reveling in newly acquired Bene Gesserit abilities. Honored Mater forces had good weapons down there, she noted, and Teg's heat absorption pads were taking punishment. But even as she watched, the defensive perimeter collapsed. She could hear howling as a large Idaho-designed disruptor went bouncing down a passage between tall trees, knocking out defenders right and left. Other memory gave her a peculiar comparison. It was like a circus. Ships landing, disgorging their human cargoes. In the center ring, the Spider Queen, acts never before seen by the human eye. Odraid's persona produced a sense of amusement. How's this for closeness of sisterhood? Are you dead down there, Dar? You must be. Spider Queen will blame you and be enraged. Trees placed long afternoon shadows across Teg's lane of attack, she saw, inviting cover. He ordered his people to go around, ignoring inviting avenues. Look for hard ways to approach and use them. The Citadel lay in a gigantic botanical garden. Strange trees and even stranger bushes mingled with prosaic plantings, all scattered around as though thrown there by a dancing child. Mirbella found the circus metaphor attractive. It gave perspective to what she witnessed. Announcements in her mind. Over there, dancing animals, defenders of Spider Queen, all bound to obey. And in the first ring, the main event, supervised by our ringmaster, Miles Teg. His people do mysterious things. Here is the talent. It had aspects of a staged battle in the Roman circus. Mirbella appreciated the illusion. It made observation richer. Battle towers filled with armored soldiers approach. They engage. Flames cut the sky. Bodies fall. But these were real bodies, real pains, real deaths. Bene Gesserit's sensitivities forced her to regret the waste. Is this how it was for my parents caught in the sweep? Metaphors from other memory vanished. She saw Junction then, as she knew Teg must see it. Bloody violence. Familiar in memory, and yet new. She saw attackers advancing. Heard them. Woman's voice, distinct with shock. That bush screamed at me. Another voice, male. No telling where some of this originated. That sticky stuff burns your skin. Mirbella heard action on the far side of the Citadel, but it grew eerily quiet around Teg's position. She saw his troops flitting through shadows, closing in on the tower. There was Teg on Stregi's shoulders. He took a moment to stare up at the facade confronting them about half a click away. She chose a projection that looked where he looked. Motion behind windows there. Where were the mysterious last-ditch weapons honored maters were supposed to possess? What will they do now? Teg had lost his command pod to a laser hit outside the main engagement area. The pod lay on its side behind him, and he sat astride Stregi's shoulders in a patch of screening bushes, some still smoldering. He had lost his comm board with the pod, but retained the silvery horseshoe of his comm link, although it was crippled without the pod's amplifiers. communication specialists crouch nearby, jittering because they had lost close contact with the action. The battle beyond the buildings grew louder. He heard hoarse shouts, the high hissing of burners and the low buzz of large laser guns, mingled with tinny zip-zips of hand weapons. Somewhere off there to his left was a thrum-thrum he recognized as heavy armor in trouble. A scraping sound with it. Metal agony. Energy system damaged in that one. It was dragging itself over the ground, probably making a mess of the gardens. Haker, Tag's personal aide, came dodging down the lane behind the Bashar. Stragi noticed him first and turned without warning, forcing Tag to look at the man. Haker, dark and muscular, with heavy eyebrows, sweat dampened now, stopped directly in front of Tag and spoke before fully regaining his breath.
"We have the last pockets bottled up, Bashar."
Haker raised his voice to override the battle sounds and a buzzing squawker over his left shoulder producing low conversations, battle urgency in clipped tones.
"The far perimeter?" Tag demanded. "Mop up in half an hour, no more. You should get out of here, Bashar. Mother Superior warned us to keep out of needless danger."
Tag gestured at his useless pod.
"Why don't I have a communications backup?"
"A big laser got both backups in the same burn as they were coming in."
"They were together?"
Haker heard the anger.
"Sir, they were..." "No important equipment is sent in together. I'll want to know who disobeyed orders."
The quiet voice from immature vocal cords carried more menace than a shout.
"Yes, Bashar."
Strictly obedient, and no sign from Haker that the mistake was his own.
"Damn. How soon will replacements arrive?"
5 minutes.
"Get my reserve pod in here as fast as you can."
Tag touched Draghi's neck with a knee. Haker spoke before she could turn.
"Bashar, they got the reserve, too. I've ordered another."
Tag repressed a sigh. These things happened in battle, but he didn't like depending on primitive comms.
"We'll set up here. Get more squawkers."
They at least had the range. Haker glanced at the greenery around them.
"Here?"
"I don't like the look of those buildings up ahead. That tower commands this area, and they must have underground access. I would."
"There's nothing on the..."
"My memory layout doesn't include that tower. Get Sonics in here to check the ground. I want our plan brought up to the minute with secure information."
Haker's squawker came alive with an override voice.
"Bashar, is the Bashar available?"
Stragi moved him next to Haker without being told. Tag took the squawker, whistling his code as he grabbed it.
"Bashar,
it's a mess at the flat. About 100 of them tried to lift and ran into our screen. No survivors."
"Any sign of Mother Superior or her Spider Queen?"
"Negative. We can't tell. I mean, it's a real mess. Shall I screen a view?"
"Get me a dispatch. And keep looking for Odraid."
"I tell you, nothing survived here, Bashar." There was a click and a low hum, then another voice.
"Dispatch."
Tag brought his voice print coder from beneath his chin and barked quick orders.
"Scramble a hammer ship over the Citadel. Put the scene at the landing flat and their other disasters on open relay. All bands. Make sure they can see it. Announce no survivors at the flat."
The double click of received confirmed broke the link. Haker said,
"Do you really think you can terrify them?"
"Educate them."
He repeated Odraid's parting words.
Their education had been sadly neglected.
What had happened to Odraid? He felt sure she must be dead. Perhaps the first casualty here. She had expected that. Dead but not lost, if Mirbella could restrain her impetuosity. Odraid at that moment had taken direct sight from the tower.
Logno had silenced her vital signs transmissions with a counter-signal shield and had brought her to the tower shortly after the arrival of the first refugees from Camus. No one questioned Logno's supremacy. A dead, great honored mater, and a live one could only be something familiar. Expecting to be killed at any moment, Odraid still gathered data as she went up in a null tube with guards. The tube was an artifact from the scattering, a transparent piston in a transparent cylinder. Few obstructing walls at the floors they passed. Mostly views of living areas and esoteric hardware Odraid surmised had military purposes. Lush evidence of comfort and quiet increased the higher they went. Power climbs physically as well as psychologically. Here they were at the top. A section of the tube cylinder swung outward, and a guard pushed her roughly onto a thickly carpeted floor. The workroom Dama showed me down there was another set piece. Odraid recognized secrecy. Equipment and furnishings here would have been almost unrecognizable, were it not for Mirbella's knowledge. So other action centers were for show. Potemkin villages built for Reverend Mother. Logno lied about Dama's intentions. I was expected to leave unharmed, carrying no useful information. What other lies had they paraded in front of her? Logno and all but one guard went to a console on Odraid's right. Pivoting on one foot, Odraid looked around. This was the real center. She studied it with care. Odd place. An aura of the sanitary. Treated with chemicals to make it clean. No bacterial or viral contaminants. No strangers in the blood. Everything debugged like a showcase for rare viands. And Dama showed interest in Bene Gesserit immunity to diseases. There was bacterial warfare in the scattering. They want one thing from us. And just one surviving Reverend Mother would satisfy them, if they could wrest information from her. A full Bene Gesserit cadre would have to examine the strands of this web and see where they led, if we win. The operations console where Logno concentrated her attention was smaller than the showcase ones. Finger field manipulation. The hood on a low table beside Logno was smaller and transparent, revealing the Medusa tangle of probes. Shigawire for sure. The hood showed a close affinity to T-probes from the scattering Teg and others had described. Did these women possess more technological marvels? They must. A glittering wall behind Logno, windows on her left opening onto a balcony. A far vista of junction visible out there with movement of troops and armor. She recognized Teg in the distance, a figure on the shoulders of an adult, but gave no sign she saw anything extraordinary. She continued her slow study. Door to a passage with another null tube partly visible in a separate area to her immediate left. More green tile on the floor there. Different functions in that space. A sudden burst of noises erupted beyond the wall. Odraid identified some of them. Boots of soldiers made a distinctive sound on tiles. Swish of exotic fabrics. Voices. She distinguished accents of honored maters responding to each other in tones of shock. We're winning. Shock was to be expected when the invincible were brought low. She studied Logno. Would it be a plunge into despair? If so, I may survive. Mirbella's role might be changed. Well, that could wait. Sisters had been briefed on what to do in the event of victory. Neither they nor anyone else in the attack force would lay rough hands on an honored mater, erotic or otherwise. Duncan had prepared the men, making the perils of sexual entrapment thoroughly known. Risk no bondage. Raise no new antagonisms.
The new Spider Queen was revealed now as someone even stranger than Odraid had suspected. Logno left her console and came to within a pace of Odraid.
"You have won this battle. We are your prisoners."
No orange in her eyes. Odraid swept her gaze around at the women who had been her guards. Blank expressions, clear eyes. Was this how they showed despair? It did not feel right. Logno and the others revealed no expected emotional responses. Everything under wraps. Events of the past hour should create emotional crisis. Logno gave no sign of it. Not a twitch of revealing nerve or muscle. Perhaps a casual concern, and that was all.
A Bene Gesserit mask.
It had to be unconscious. Something automatic, ignited by defeat. So, they did not really accept defeat. We are still in there with them. Latent, but there. No wonder Mirbella almost died. She was confronting her own genetic pasts as a supreme prohibition. "My companions," Odraid said. "The three women who came with me, where are they?"
"Dead."
Logno's voice was as dead as the word. Odraid suppressed a pang for Sweepole. Tam and Dortwyla had lived long and useful lives, but Sweepole, dead and never shared.
"Another good one lost. And isn't that a bitter lesson?"
"I will identify the ones responsible if you desire revenge," Logno said.
"Lesson two.
Revenge is for children and the emotionally retarded." A small return of orange in Logno's eyes. Human self-delusion took many forms, Odraid reminded herself. Aware that the scattering would produce the unexpected, she had armed herself accordingly with a protective remoteness that would allow her a space to assess new places, new things, and new people. She had known she would be forced to put many things in different categories to serve her or deflect threats. She took Logno's attitude as a threat.
"You do not seem disturbed, great honored Mater."
"Others will avenge me." Flat, very self-composed. The words were even stranger than her composure. She held everything under that close cover. Bits and pieces revealed now in flickering movements aroused by Odraid's observation. Deep and intense things, but buried. It was all inside there, masked the way a reverend mother would mask it. Logno appeared to have no power at all, and yet she spoke as though nothing essential had changed.
"I am your captive, but that makes no difference."
Was she truly powerless? No. But that was the impression she wished to convey, and all of the other honored maters around her mirrored this response.
"See us? Powerless except for the loyalty of our sisters and the followers they have bonded to us."
Were honored maters that confident of their vengeful legions? Possible only if they had never before suffered a defeat of this kind. Yet someone had driven them back into the old empire, into the million planets. Teg found Odraid and her captives while seeking a place to assess victory. Battle always required its analytical aftermath, especially from a Mentat commander. It was a comparison test this battle demanded of him more than any other in his experience. This conflict would not be lodged in memory until assessed and shared, as far as possible among those who depended on him. It was his invariable pattern, and he did not care what it revealed about him. Break that link of interlocking interests, and you prepared yourself for defeat.
"I need a quiet place to assemble the threads of this battle and make a preliminary summary."
In his estimation, a most difficult problem of battle was to conduct it in a way that did not release human wildness. A Bene Gesserit dictum. Battle must be conducted to bring out the best in those who survived. most difficult and sometimes all but impossible. The more remote the soldier from carnage, the more difficult. It was one reason Teg always tried to move to the battle scene and examine it personally. If you did not see the pain, you could easily cause greater pain without second thoughts. That was the honored mater pattern. But their pains had been brought home. What would they make of this? That question was in his mind as he and aides emerged from the tube to see Odraid confronting a party of honored maters. "Here is our commander, the Bashar Miles Teg," Odraid said, gesturing. Honored maters stared at Teg. A child riding on the shoulders of an adult. This is their commander.
"Gola," Lognow muttered.
Odraid spoke to Haker. "Take these prisoners somewhere nearby where they can be comfortable." Haker did not move until Teg nodded, then politely indicated that captives should precede him into the tiled area on their left. Teg's dominance was not lost on honored maters. They glowered at him as they obeyed Haker's invitation. Men ordering women about. With Odraid beside him, Teg touched a knee to Stragi's neck, and they went onto the balcony. There was an oddity to the scene that he was a moment identifying. He had viewed many battle scenes from high vantages, most often from a scout thopter. This balcony was fixed in space, giving him a sense of immediacy. They stood about 100 meters above the botanical gardens where much of the fiercest conflict had taken place. Many bodies lay sprawled in final dislodgement, dolls thrown aside by departing children. He recognized uniforms of some of his troops and felt a pang. Could I have done something to prevent this? He had known this feeling many times and called it command guilt. But this scene was different. Not just in that uniqueness found in any battle, but in a way that nagged at him. He decided it was partly the landscape setting, a place better suited to garden parties now torn by an ancient pattern of violence. Small animals and birds were returning, nervously furtive after the upset of all that noisy human intrusion. Little furry creatures with long tails sniffed at casualties and scampered up neighboring trees for no apparent reason. Colorful birds peered from screening foliage or flitted across the scene. Lines of blurred pigmentation that became camouflage when they ducked abruptly under leaves. Feathered accents to the scene, trying to restore that non-tranquility human observers mistook for peace in such settings. Teg knew better. In his pre-Gola life, he had grown up surrounded by wilderness. Farm life close by, but wild animals just beyond cultivation. It was not tranquil out there. With that observation, he recognized what had tugged at his awareness. Considering the fact they had stormed a well-manned defensive emplacement occupied by heavily armed defenders, the number of casualties down there was extremely small. He had seen nothing to explain this since entering the Citadel. Were they caught off balance? Their losses in space were one thing. His ability to see defender ships produced a devastating advantage. But this complex held prepared positions where defenders could have fallen back and made the assault more costly. Collapse of honored Mater resistance had been abrupt, and now it remained unexplained. I was wrong to assume they responded to display of their disasters. He glanced at Odraid. That great honored mater in there, did she give the command for defense to stop? That's my assumption. Cautious and a typical Bene Gesserit answer. She, too, was subjecting the scene to careful observation. Was her assumption a reasonable explanation for the abruptness with which defenders threw down their arms? Why would they do it? To prevent more bloodshed? Given the callousness honored maters usually demonstrated, that was unlikely. The decision had been made for reasons that plagued him. A trap. Now that he thought about it,
there were other strange things about the battle scene. None of the usual calls from wounded. No scurrying about with cries for stretchers and medics. He could see Sooks moving among the bodies. That, at least, was familiar. But every figure they examined was left where it had fallen. All dead? No wounded? He experienced gripping fear. Not an unusual fear in battle, but he had learned to read it. Something profoundly wrong. Noises, things within his view, the smells took on a new intensity. He felt himself acutely attuned, a predatory animal in the jungle, knowing his terrain but aware of something intrusive that must be identified, lest he become hunted instead of hunter. He registered his surroundings at a different level of consciousness, reading himself as well, searching out arousal patterns that had achieved this response. Stregi trembled beneath him. So she felt his distress. "Something's very wrong here," Odred said. He pushed a hand at her, demanding silence. Even in this tower, surrounded by victorious troops, he felt exposed to a threat his clamoring senses failed to reveal.
Danger.
He was sure of it. The unknown frustrated him. It required every bit of his training to keep from falling into a nervous fugue. Nudging Stregi to turn, Teg barked an order to an aide standing in the balcony doorway. The aide listened quietly and ran to obey. They must get casualty figures. How many wounded compared to deaths? Reports on captured weapons. Urgent. When he returned to his examination of the scene, he saw another disturbing thing. A basic oddity his eyes had tried to report. Very little blood on those fallen figures in Bene Gesserit uniforms. You expected battle casualties to show that ultimate evidence of common humanity. Flowing red that darkened on exposure, but always left its indelible mark in the memories of those who saw it. Lack of bloody carnage was an unknown, and in warfare, unknowns had a history of bringing extreme peril. He spoke softly to Odred. They have a weapon we have not discovered. Do not be quick to reveal judgment. Hidden judgment often is more potent. It can guide reactions whose effects are felt only when too late to divert them. Bene Gesserit advised to postulants. Shiana smelled worms at a distance. Cinnamon undertones of melange mingled with bitter flint and brimstone. The crystal-banked inferno of the great Rockian sand-eaters. But she sensed these tiny descendants only because they existed out there in such numbers. They are so small. It had been hot here at Desert Watch today, and now in late afternoon she welcomed the artificially cooled interior. There was a tolerable temperature adjustment in her old quarters, although the window on the west had been left open. Shiana went to that window and stared out at glaring sand. Memory told her what this vantage would be tonight. Starlight bright in dry air. Thin illumination on sand waves that reached to a darkly curved horizon. She remembered Rockian moons and missed them. Stars alone did not satisfy her Fremen heritage. She had thought of this as a retreat, a place and time to think about what was happening to her sisterhood. Axolotl tanks, cyborgs, and now this. Odred's plan held no mystery since their sharing. A gamble. And if it succeeded... We will know perhaps tomorrow. And then what will we become? She admitted to a magnet in Desert Watch. More than a place to consider consequences. She had walked in sun-scorched heat today, proving to herself she could still call worms with her dance, emotion expressed as action. Dance of propitiation, my language of the worms. She had gone dervish whirling on a dune until hunger shattered her memory trance. And little worms were spread all around in gaping watchfulness, remembered flames within the frames of crystal teeth.
But why so small?
The words of investigators explained but did not satisfy. It is the dampness. Shiana recalled giant Shai Halud of Dune, the old man of the desert, large enough to swallow spice factories, ring surfaces hard as plasterite, masters in their own domain, god and devil in the sands. She sensed the potential from her window vantage. Why did the tyrant choose symbiotic existence in a worm? Did those tiny worms carry his endless dream? Sand trout inhabited this desert. Accept them as a new skin, and she might follow the tyrant's path. Metamorphosis, the divided god. She knew the lure. Do I dare? Memories of her last moments of ignorance came over her. Barely 8 then. The month of Agat on Dune. Not Rakis. Dune, as my ancestors named it. Not difficult to recall herself as she had been. A slender, dark-skinned child, streaked brown hair. Melange hunter, because that was a task for children, running into open desert with childhood companions. How dear it felt in memory. But memory had its darker side. Focusing attention into the nostrils, a girl detected intense odors. A pre-spice mass. The blow. Melange's explosion brought Shaitan. No sandworm could resist a spice blow in its territory. You ate it all, tyrant. That miserable collection of shacks and hovels we called home. And all of my friends and family. Why did you spare me? What a rage had shaken that slender child. Everything she loved taken by a giant worm that refused her attempts to sacrifice herself in its flames and carried her into the hands of Rakium priests, thence to the Bene Gesserit. She talks to the worms, and they spare her. They who spared me are not spared by me. That was what she had told Odraid. And now Odraid knows what I must do. You cannot suppress the wild thing, Dar. I dare call you Dar now that you are within me. No response. Was there a pearl of Leto II's awareness in each of the new sandworms? Her Fremen ancestors insisted on it. Someone handed her a sandwich. Wally, the senior acolyte assistant who had assumed command of Desert Watch. At my insistence, when Odraid elevated me to the council, but not just because Wally learned my immunity to honored Mater's sexual bonding, and not because she is sensitive to my needs. We speak a secret language, Wally and I. Wally's large eyes no longer were entrances to her soul. They were filmed barriers giving evidence she already knew how to block probing stares. A light blue pigmentation that soon would be all blue if she survived the agony. Almost albino, and a questionable genetic line for breeding. Wally's skin reinforced this judgment, pale and freckled. A skin you saw as a surface transparency. You did not focus on the skin itself, but on what lay beneath. Pink, blood-suffused flesh, unprotected from a desert sun. Only here in the shade could Wally expose that sensitive surface to questioning eyes. Why this one in command over us? Because I trust her best to do what must be done. Shiana ate the sandwich absently while she returned her attention to the sandscape. The whole planet thus one day. Another dune? No, similar, but different. How many such places are we creating in an infinite universe? Senseless question. Desert Vagary placed a small black dot in the distance. Shiana squinted. Ornithopter. It grew slowly larger and then smaller, quartering the sand, inspecting. What are we really creating here?
When she looked at encroaching dunes, she sensed hubris. "Look upon my works, tiny human, and despair. But we did this, my sisters and I. Did you?" "I can feel a new dryness in the heat," Wami said. Shiana agreed. No need to speak. She went to the large work table while she still had daylight to study the tapa map spread out there. Little flag sticking in it, green thread on pushpins, just as she had designed it. Odraid had asked once, "Is this really preferable to a projection? I need to touch it." Odraid accepted that. Projections palled, too far removed from dirt. You could not draw a finger down a projection and say, "We will go down here." A finger in a projection was a finger in empty air. "Eyes are never enough. The body must feel its world." Shiana detected pungency of male perspiration, a musty smell of exertion. She lifted her head and saw a dark young man standing in the doorway, arrogant pose, arrogant look. "Oh," he said, "I thought you'd be alone, Wally. I'll come back later." One piercing stare at Shiana, and he was gone. There are many things the body must feel to know them. "Shiana, why are you here?" Wally asked. "You who are so busy on the council, what do you seek? Don't you trust me?" "I came to consider what the Missionaria still thinks I may do. They see a weapon, the myths of Dune. Billions pray to me. The Holy One who spoke to the divided God." "Billions is not an adequate number," Wally said. "But it measures the force my sisters see in me. Those worshippers believe I died with Dune. I've become a powerful spirit in the pantheon of the oppressed." "More than a missionary." "What might happen, Wally, if I appeared in that waiting universe, a sandworm beside me? The potential of such a thing fills some of my sisters with hope and misgivings." "Misgivings, I understand." "Indeed. The very kind of religious implant Moabdeeb and his tyrant son set loose on unsuspecting humankind." "Why do they even consider it?" Wally insisted. "With me as fulcrum, what a lever they would have to move the universe." "But how could they control such a force?" "That is the problem. Something so inherently unstable. Religions are never really controllable. But some sisters think they could aim a religion built around me." "And if their aim is poor?" "They say the religions of women always flow deeper."
"True?"
Questioning a superior source. Shiana could only nod. Other memory confirmed it.
"Why?"
"Because within us, life renews itself."
"That's all of it?"
Openly doubting. "Women often bear the aura of underdog. Humans reserve a special sympathy for ones at the bottom. I am a woman, and if honored maters want me dead, then I must be blessed."
"You sound as though you agree with the Missionaria."
"When you're one of the hunted, you consider any path of escape. I am revered. I cannot ignore the potential."
"Nor the danger."
"So my name has become a shining light in the darkness of honored mater oppression. How easy for that light to become a consuming flame." "No, the plan she and Duncan had worked out was better. Escape from Chapter House. It was a death trap, not only for its inhabitants, but for Bene Gesserit dreams."
"I still don't understand why you're here. We may no longer be hunted."
"May?
But why just now?"
"I cannot speak it openly, because then the watchdogs would know. I have this fascination with worms. It's partly because one of my ancestors led the original migration to Dune.
You remember this, Wally. We spoke of it once out there on the sand, with only the two of us to hear."
and now you know why I've come visiting. I remember you saying she was a proper Fremen, and a Zensuni master. I will lead my own migration, Molly, but I will need worms only you can provide, and it must be done quickly. The reports from Junction urge speed, and the first ships will return soon, tonight, tomorrow. I fear what they bring. Are you still interested in taking a few worms back to Central, where you can study them closely? Oh, yes, Wally, you do remember. It might be interesting. I don't have much time for such things, but any knowledge we gain may help us. It'll be too wet for them back there. The great hold of the no-ship on the flat could be reconverted into a desert lab. Sand, controlled atmosphere. The essentials are there from when we brought the first worm. Shiana glanced at the western window. Sunset. I would like to go down again and walk on the sand. But the first ships return tonight. Of course, Reverend Mother. Wally stood aside, opening the way to the door. Shiana spoke as she was leaving. Desert Watch will have to be moved before long. We are prepared. The sun was dipping below the horizon when Shiana emerged from the arched street at the edge of the community. She strode into star-lit desert, exploring with her senses as she had done as a child. Ah, there was the cinnamon essence. Worms near. She paused and, turning northeast, away from the last sunglow, placed her palms flat above and below her eyes in the old Fremen way, confining view and light. She stared out of a horizontal frame. Whatever fell from heaven must pass this narrow slit. Tonight. They will come just after dark to delay the moment of explanation. A full night for reflection. She waited with Bene Gesserit patience. An arc of fire drew a thin line above the northern horizon. Another, another. They were positioned right for the landing flat. Shiana felt her heart beating fast. They have come. And what would be their message for the Sisterhood? Returning warriors, triumphant, or refugees? There could be little difference given the evolution of Odrate's plan. She would know by morning. Shiana lowered her hands and found she was trembling. Deep breath. The litany. Presently she walked the desert, sand walking in the remembered stride of Dune. She had almost forgotten how the feet dragged, as though they carried extra weight. Seldom used muscles were called into play, but the random walk, once learned, was never forgotten. Once, I never dreamed I would ever again walk this way. If watchdogs detected that thought, they might wonder about their Shiana. It was a failure in herself, she thought. She had grown into the rhythms of Chapter House. This planet talked to her at a subterranean level. She felt earth, trees, and flowers. Every growing thing as though all were part of her. And now, here was disturbing movement, something in a language from a different planet. She sensed the desert changing, and that too was an alien tongue. Desert. Not lifeless, but living in a way profoundly different from once verdant Chapter House. Less life, but more intense. She heard the desert. Small slitherings, creaking chirps of insects, a dark rustle of hunting wings overhead, and the quickest of ploppings on the sand. Kangaroo mice brought here in anticipation of this day when worms would once more begin their rule. Wally will remember to send flora and fauna from Dune. She stopped atop a tall barrican. In front of her, darkness blurring its edges, was an ocean caught in stop motion. A shadow surf beating on a shadow beach of this changing land. It was a limitless desert sea. It had originated far away, and it would go to stranger places than this. I will take you there, if I am able. A night breeze from dry lands to moister places behind her deposited a film of dust on her cheeks and nose, lifting the edges of her hair as it passed. She felt saddened. What might have been? That no longer was important. The things that are, they matter. She took a deep breath. Cinnamon stronger. Melange. Spice and worms near. Worms aware of her presence. How soon would this air be dry enough for the sandworms to grow great and work their crop as they had on Dune? The planet and the desert. She saw them as two halves of the same saga, just as the Bene Gesserit and the humankind they served, matched halves. Either without the other was diminished, an emptiness with lost purpose. Not better dead, perhaps, but moving aimlessly. There lay the threat of honored Mater victory, aimed by blind violence. Blind in a hostile universe. And there was why the tyrant had preserved the sisterhood. He knew he only gave us the path without direction. A paper chase laid down by a jokester and left empty at the end. A poet in his own right, though.